very much like the algebra from algebra directly. From finite-dimensional algebras. So let me, if you remember, we had this picture where this, there's an H, the H is algebra or coalgebra, depends on the context. And we have H tensor H here, but because when we have modules, one of them will be replaced by a vector space. And you still have B. Let me complete the picture. And you know you have this map, lambda bar, which maps tensor of dual to the dual of tensor. And this map naturally would have to be so what is it saying is that if you have a right module, V is a right module of H, then by via this composition, you can get a co-module structure of V star, H star co-module structure on the V star. And this requires lambda to be isomorphism, and which is the case if H or V is finite dimensional. So let me just write a corresponding thing. So this triangle gives us that if H is the right module. I mean, not H is right module. If given any H right module, this mu would be written on the left. I just invented the notation. And if H is finite dimensional, then we have that H star. Well, we have an H star left module structure on co-module structures. On V star, on the dual space of V with this mapping its co-module map. Meaning it's the coaction, gives you the coaction properties. And so let me complete this picture. We had the rectangle last time. So what we have is, so if we, now we're gonna say, let's start with any co-module, any H co-module. Can we get H star module structure on the dual of the vector space? So it's true, you can do that. And you can take the dual of this co-module co-action map, and by composing with lambda, pre-composing with lambda, you get a right module structure of A star. H star one. So there are a couple of you need to specify module or co-module over what. So this is quite similar to what we did before. So I'm not going to. For completeness. So lambda bar takes two things in the dual space, apply it to A tensor B. So this is supposed to be something in the dual space of the tensor product. So you apply it on the tensor product space, and you're supposed to get some kind of number, like in the field. So this number is obtained by letting this alpha act on the first element multiplied by So that was kind of wrapping up the algebraic section.
In the first case, H star is left co-module, right? Co-module.
The first one, which one?
No, the right side, H star, left co-module.
Yeah, I was trying to fit it in. Now I want to go to this picture, which kind of says, I would like to introduce. Any question about this? So I guess introducing a categorical language and kind of saying why we want to do that, or what's the big picture? How? Why do we need? So. So categories. So sometimes you say, oh, write down a map that's like with a bunch of categories in the middle, and it connects between the different algebra structure. Well, some of which we haven't defined, but the various algebra structure and the various topological link invariants. I mean topological invariants, like what dimension? So let me write down these terms without, you know, knowing what each of the definition is. Later we'll try to fill and define all these things so that you understand this. So if we start with a braided triangle, because we haven't really defined it, but we know what biogebra is, we have to put a braided on it. Then it's category modules, you know, like we have talked about earlier. If you look at all the possible modules over certain this diagram, we'll get something called the graded category. So we have this definition, but you cannot quite go the other way around. I mean, it's not like any graded, but it's not like any category comes from a graded diagram. We have this. And what you get is some sort of invariant something. And this invariant, you know, if you have some sort of tensor category, these are, well, all these categories I'm talking about will be tensor categories. And we have invariant operators. And so invariant, this is actually kind of an endomorphism value. So it's not, anyway, so I'm putting quote on it. I mean, I won't elaborate too much, but it's just not a C value or negative field, doesn't take value in this field yet before you take the closure. So now if you're sticking the antipole, so we have a top algebra structure as well as being graded these by algebras. Then we have a braided category with dwarfs. So it's like, so we kind of mentioned before that this antipole will give us some sort of duality on the category module. So here you just physically stick in the dwarf. So you see like how algebra structure gives you some sort of structure algebra category, corresponding category. And let's move to the next column. I'm leaving this line intentionally. So we can go to ribbon category, or some people call it quasi triangular category. Just called quasi triangular. Now I don't know that why the terminology is so, but ribbon category is kind of a better name because you know on the right side you get invariants of ribbons.
But ribbon category is an algebra, not a category. I mean, it's a category.
Ribbon algebra. I was writing the wrong one. Where is the name? Do we have eraser?
There's one up there. Yeah, and also the right one.
This is going to be a mistake. I love it. So this is also called positive triangle. I guess hot algebra. Mm-hmm. So this is invariant of this. And ribbons are like frame angles. So let me complete this row. So ribbon algebra, I mean, because we don't know what a lot of these definitions are yet. So I mean, you know, accessible to, well, for us, like, accessible name to give it seems to be just ribbon category. But we can run a definition and see how they correspond. And again, so, okay, and given this category, using some kind of graphic calculus type of thing, you can kind of represent these things as, you know, the topological objects.
What's the difference between a ribbon category and a tangle category?
So it has framing.
Which one has framing?
Ribbon has framing. Because
so
it has width, right?
So ribbon category is just a frame, the tangle frame.
Yes.
Okay. And what's the difference between tangle category and the braid category?
So frame tangle has closure, so you can round, you know, things. I guess if you slice it with mm-hmm. respect to time, you're allowed just turns. Whereas braids just only goes one way.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So here you just stick in a twist. And this twist is a result of this theta they introduced here. So there was some algebraic theta special element which has special properties. And at the level of category modules, they give you a twist, which will specify kind of the framing.
So theta is just kind of isomorphism between vector spaces.
Theta itself is an algebra element.
I know, but uh-huh. I think
well, you can call it theta between the twist, I guess. Theta
yeah. It behaves like a kind of isomorphism on vector spaces.
Right.
If it's an identity, then it means no twist.
Yes, it means no, any twist or, no twist, or it means that even if you twist a ribbon, you can identify a rectangle, kind of. So if the twist is identity, then what you get here will be, you know, you'll be very tempting to put something here, which is like invariant of tangles, right?
But this ribbon.
So, but this is not, you don't imply it, but you only get it if you have a ribbon category with twist one, you get here, basically.
So this ribbon is in a very generalized sense. It doesn't mean a two-dimensional surface. The framing can be done with any vector space, vector fields. Doesn't have to
framing,
be.
You can.
So the ribbon doesn't mean a two-dimensional surface. It means generalized structure.
So it is, but I guess when you use graphical calculus or something, the good thing is you can represent it by, I guess, often or in. So which one does it represent? So. Which way is the general? I'm going to see which is it's probably not right.
Because if the ribbon is means just a two-dimensional, then the theta can only be pi or 2 pi, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's,
so,
it's more than.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. But you,
So for example, if you have a line, you frame it. You can frame it into a ribbon, or a tube. Or even more mm-hmm. higher dimensional structure.
Categories, they kind of act on any vector space, it's fine, and maybe they don't have to be. Rotation, the loss of axis, maybe it's not, it doesn't matter. But it's kind of when you go to this story, when you kind of represent things by lines and hang, so then you can kind of, without much loss of generality, consider ribbon, the twist as a twist. Or because it satisfies similar axioms, topological, that's the twist. So think maybe you can think of the ribbon as slightly different spaces for now, and later we can sort out how they're connected. Okay, so so this lake wasn't drawn in, so you were so tempted to do this, but obviously, like as you were pointing out, like you only have a ribbon category and have theta kind of equals the identity, would you have invariant entangles, so there's no way this is false. So you don't get invariant entangles from gradient candidate rules. Even though you do have this operation, you know, the capping operation and grades, like it seems like you do.
So, but the ribbon category does have the capping operation.
Yes, it does have the capping operation.
Okay, so it has not just the sort of.
It's just not consistent, kind of. I mean, it doesn't have to be. It, for example, I guess, so how you entangle, so you require, maybe entangle, so you can maybe require this thing to be like that, right?
Right.
And that's not consistent.
In the ribbon category, you can twist, right?
Yeah. You need to first have a consistent twist, and the twist is at one. Then you get it as the same. Because in here, they generally are not the same. So, so let's see what else is missing. So, like you're saying, this we're missing the cappings here, and here we're missing the cappings. And I guess another object you'd like to introduce, but you know, might not be that important, is you could stick in, I don't know what the algebraic corresponding algebraic object is called, so I didn't. But if you want for completeness, you can kind of stick in maybe graded category with twist. Like, consider with walls, you can stick in this framing with kind of without being reclosive. So, like, you can kind of go this way, but then you can by require more properties again to ribbon category, right? And on this side, it would be invariance of frame, like frame grade, I guess. Maybe like, maybe it's not very, maybe it's less useful. Maybe that's what they're going to talk about. I'm not sure. But you just, maybe why I'm saying it is just because I want you to notice that, so you can skip this step, for example. Because to get from braided to ribbon, basically you get two extra things, which one corresponds to the capping, the other one corresponds to giving you the framing. And you can kind of stick in them in kind of order. I mean, you don't have to go this way, you can go this way. You can stick in that first and then the other. But I don't know what the corresponding algebraic objects are. And I would like to say that on this side, so these are true. If you have these things, you give you this kind of category. But also, if you relax them a bit, you still get this kind of categories. So because mainly because these categories are very are not strict categories. So you allow, well, which one we define? Okay, so we define. So, but if you don't consider strict categories, these things will correspond to. You give you this map. Like the categories not only give you, well, I guess a connection between these, it also motivates some generalization of these things, which are the policy stuff. I mean, you can say gradient policy half algebra, so of course it's linear algebra probably. I mean, so you corresponding definition, which just means that you allow this associated copy. So instead of depend on which way, the hexagon equation, you have a that 12-sided thing. You just allow some additional associations. So that's the motivation for these quasi algebra objects. So you, because usually algebra are associated algebras, and they don't have to be associated. They can relax that condition and still give you well-defined tensor categories in the middle column. Now it goes through with some category definitions. You want to use this as a map and try to complete the picture that's, you know, later on, filling all the gaps. So it's a first define, before I say tensor category, first define category and add elements, I mean ingredients. One start with California. So I guess you usually call it C. So what ingredients does it have? So it has maybe we can think of them as a set now. Or some like bigger sets. So you have a set of objects. I'm still going to call it sets. A set of like morphisms that go between the objects. Right, so you can think of, for example, vector spaces. You can think of linear maps between vector spaces. And you have an identity for each object. So every vector space map, the identity on any vector space is a linear map. And there's a source, the map source. So if given any morphisms, so each step you find a morphism, then given any morphism, you can say what the source space is and what the target space is.
It's just morphism, or has to be homomorphism.
It would be helpful, right? So ID is in HOM, and S and I assume B are going to be objects, right?
No, S is a function on morphisms, I guess you can say.
But it maps the morphism to the objects.
Morphism to the object, yes,
yeah.
That's right. So.
I'm just suggesting that you write down a little bit of structure so that we can finish
that. Sure. Okay. Because without writing, once you know then without writing, you can compare more easily between different colors. Maybe let's use maybe different color. Because so I don't want you to pay as much attention to it once you know.
So again, this time, what you saw the scene?
Objects. So this is a set of objects.
This is just a set?
Not even a set. I'm just calling it the collection. I don't know. They all have something.
Class. It's just class.
Yeah, okay, the class of objects. It's
bigger. It could potentially be bigger than a set.
What is the difference between a class and a set?
Well, do you know Russell's paradox?
Yeah.
So, if you define sets, could have this property, you can define them by kind of.
So, sets must have all the same type.
That's right.
Class
can continue different types. That's right, yeah.
But other than that, they're sets.
Yeah, I mean, basically, most of the time you can think of them as sets, because don't do anything too fancy with them. That's a small category in the case when it those things for sets. I think so,
yeah. We can deal with what is the naive set theories. So here are morphisms, but morphism and morphism are really kind of those synonyms. Maybe for algebra, sometimes they call things homomorphic, but they're really the same thing. Basically, they're the same with respect properties of the objects. In here, I guess you say it's directly from the from C to the object C. Then you have also composition. So composition, I guess, maps home, cross home, that kind of thing. I mean, you have to be composable, right? To home again. How do I be not composable? I don't remember exactly. So maybe whatever composable is.
I think we can.
Maybe let me know if I need to write down more. Write down more than this, but I want to move on to the next level. So I guess the composition, for example, let me just give the vector space in, for example, that you have U, V, W to vector space, and if you have a linear map from U to V and a linear map from V to W, so they share the middle space, then you compose them, you still get a linear map. That's what it's named. They still get something in the home. Or you can have this arrow still always inside your origin. What do the morphisms look like? So now let's define functors. So I guess if you know it, you can write it in a line. But so what it does is, I I guess it maps objects to objects, but also maps map to map, and it, while preserving certain things. Seems like the theme in a moment. So maps objects in one category to objects of the other category, at the same time also takes any arrow to any, like to any arrow to arrows in the other second category. And what it needs to do is preserve basically what categories care about. Basically these four things.
Can that be policy that policy from?
Okay. So, I mean, all of these just, you know, whatever property you have, you want to preserve it. If you bother to write them down as you're defining in your definition, you should preserve them. And maybe I will say a little bit just by now, so I see what preserving is. So, I guess preserving would be like, F of identity is the identity. So in C is identity in C. V is identity in B. B prime. Like you get to a new object, but the identity of that object becomes identity of the new object. And so on. And this S, which is what we're saying. So maps an arrow here to an arrow here, but the sword, but F acting on this source is the same as acting on this source is the same as the source of the defined arrow. Okay, and the composition you okay. I don't know composition because you okay. Composition and definitely okay, and then we always right now. We don't say
anything. No, can I ask a very naive question? So if I have two categories, can I always find a functor between them? Or there are some conditions?
There must be some trivial functor, right? Which maps everything to one object, all objects to one object,
yeah,
and then all maps
sure.
to data.
That should work. Like, so you have a big functor. So you cannot be met onto, for example, because there might be more structure here. You don't have the cycle structure of the morphisms here. But if you have any category, as long as you contain one object and the identity has identity, you can map all the things. You can class everything to that object and classing all the arrows to the identity because that must exist. It's a kind of trivial example. It's like a zero map. Well, maybe it's like a zero map for vector spaces or something.
Other than that, I mean, other than
then I think you, so I guess to map, like, let's just say in level graphs, if you start with a category with like some three cycle graph, so I mean like the I mean if your arrows form some kind of triangle in this other than your first category, then if you map to there, non trivially, it kind of needs some kind of triangle structure on the other one too, right? Well, it just takes a structure. Like, you can first ask whether there's kind of graph homomorphism properly. I mean, some sort of.
So my question is, if there is something that is the analog of the dimension vector spaces, right? Because basically the dimension is what characterizes the fact that for vector spaces to be isomorphic.
But.
So that there is an isomorphism.
No, it's much more complicated.
So
they can have all sorts of different structure.
Mm-hmm. So there is not such a simple thing that says, oh, there is a functor between them.
I mean, it may be that once you start to put additional properties on them, that actually does. But I mean, vector spaces have a lot of structure, which is why you have this. I mean, it's a big theorem, right? That you
can yes.
just characterize by it. And categories in general don't have very much structure.
Okay.
The functor already preserves a source and target, doesn't mean it's already a coherent function?
Yeah, functors usually mean coherent. Maybe I should just. They sometimes use contravariant, then they will specify it.
So what's a non-covariant functor?
Oh, in a contravariant functor, for example, what happens to this composition is to switch the position.
So you mean switch the target and source?
I guess it will also, it has to be message. But if you F, if you want to say F composed of G, let's just write it out and see it. So get F name composed FG composed with F. So you see this two.
For contravariant.
For contravariant, yeah. I mean, he was asking. So this is another kind of function. I mean, as long as you, you change switch orientation of arrows.
Okay.
I mean, so in the two categories, the graph as graphs, like, you know, they're kind of very, you know, have, like, I mean, sometimes I guess people like to view these as graphs. At some level, they have to be, and then you just switch the arrows. And
so the most general kind of functor would be either covariant or contravariant.
No, I think the functor has to be
covariant. If you don't put any prefix, it's covariant. It's covariant.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Just when they introduced the other day, you know, maybe they feel like they need to have to emphasize that property. And then now let's go do natural transformations, which is very useful in all these definitions. Coming up definitions. So it's both theta from F.
Sorry, I think you're too far.
So I'm building up on the definitions, the categories and natural transformations. So it takes eta will relate the set of objects. So when you start with so F and G are both say from C to C prime, let's say. Functors from C to C prime, right? Just to give the categories a name. And when you let F act on the set of objects, C you kind of objects, I say, okay. Okay, never mind. So, I mean, what I want to say, I guess I'm using some loose notation. It's not, I'll just introduce them more intelligently. So, how do you relate them? Okay, so what you do is, so how you do this is that you let it end on the object, you get mapped by theta to some other object. So, actually, theta is, an isomorphism in the category, maybe, I don't know. So basically, anytime, so gift theta is an arrow, I think, in C prime. Okay, if an arrow in C prime, that's invertible. So you can compose with something else, pre-compose or post-compose with something else, give you that energy. I mean, but it's a family of these things. So on any object, you assign an arrow, to some, possibly some other object or self, whatever. And all of those are invertible. All these arrows are invertible. And you get one arrow on each object. So that's what it is. But the purpose of doing so is, I guess, to say, okay, if I know F and V, I know what G and V is. So F and G, so take a V in C. And now you get an element in C prime and C prime. These two elements are related by theta. And so can you go the other way around, right? This is kind of, you know, you're supposed to recover the object. And then you also have, if you start with a morphism in C, then F of F is a morphism in C prime. And you also have, this is a morphism in C prime, and this is also a morphism. Morph G of F is also morphism in C. So they get related so this is kind of, you can go both ways, kind of. This way you can only go one way. In general. Unless certain nice things happen.
So we're supposed to
So F of F, a morphism in C prime. But eta is a family of isomorphisms in C prime. So we're supposed to think of it like completing the square.
Let me draw first the morphisms in C.
What is
objects of C? Always you can think of them as object and F when I write F of G.
But F is between two different.
Yeah, I haven't finished. I just haven't decided what to write V or W prime. So in C prime you have these situations. So you have F of V, like for example G of V, I guess. You know, two possibilities to use F or use G. And also you have F V prime or G V prime. And then this map F gets mapped to say F of F. And this is G of F. And so there's basically an isomorphism given by this eta. And this is also, let me just see if I'm lying about you can already cover it.
Yeah.
Maybe you can. Let me.
If you look at the inverse.
Ah, I know. Okay, never mind. So transformation is not isomorphic. That's why you cannot.
Oh.
So it's not family isomorphic, but for any object, you get an arrow to something. But when I'm defining, if there's another object called the isomorphism, which they will natural isomorphism, you have the isomorphism. But I'm really defining transformation. So actually, okay, correct myself. Eta, when I'm defining natural transformation, they do not have to be isomorphic. They just.
Okay, so then the reason it's recoverable for the objects.
That's right.
It's not. It's only. It's not really recoverable because it's a different.
Yeah, maybe it's not really recoverable. But you get both. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Because you get many more. Maybe more than one object.
It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't have to be consistent. It doesn't have to.
Given one here, maybe more than one object, get that to me,
right? Right. That's true. But also, but you said it has to be between. There has to be one from any object in C prime.
Mm-hmm.
So you could map G of V to some other object, but it won't necessarily be F of V.
So,
have the first column is F of V prime. V prime is in C prime. Oh no,
V prime is C.
Oh, V prime is C.
So I believe the family of maps are supposed to redefine all objects. Yeah, there's something going between them. So, I mean, somehow that's not quite necessary, right? I mean, for this to kind of really make sense, so given F and G, eta is only kind of fixed in this definition, only up to the image of F, right? Because if it's also an image, who cares where they go? But, okay. So when you have isomorphism, let me say in this case, I mean, and we're not, I don't think we're I mean.
I understand if eta is a map from one to the other, or no, or it's just a relation between the two?
It's a map in the C prime. It's a morphism in the C prime.
Okay, so it's a map.
So, yeah.
Morphisms in categories aren't necessarily maps in the usual sense.
Okay, so it's
an arrow or something.
Is it many to one, not one to many?
No, I mean, objects don't have to have any internal structure.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so I mean, it's easy to think of them as sets, and then the morphisms are maps,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't have to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
What is morphism?
It's just an abstract definition.
Yeah.
A morphism is an arrow between.
Yeah, it can be just a point. It has no internal structure.
Yeah, no. All I'm saying is that to any object on the left-hand side corresponds only one object on the left-hand side. This is...
Yeah, that's right.
So it's at most many to one, no?
Oh, yeah, acting on the objects.
Yeah.
Yes, okay, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, sorry.
Whereas a relation is anything.
Yeah, that's
is any subset of the Cartesian product.
Sure.
Okay. So, I mean, just in this case, you get the other arrow back. Let's keep going.
So, okay. I guess I'm a little confused by the notation. So, eta is, we're using the symbol eta to represent many different morphisms of C prime.
Right. C prime, yes. So what you do is you say A to B, and that will give you a particular morphism.
So to every object of C, you associate a morphism in C prime, and that.
No.
Yeah, I think so.
No, not for every object.
On C.
Still on C.
I think that maybe it makes more sense. For this definition. Because otherwise I have a lot of redundancy.
Okay.
It just, okay. I mean, I wasn't prepared for writing this down because that was already one level of extract the information. Yeah, that's careful. So, I mean, I should be careful writing all these down. Because you know what they are before you know the properties. Yeah, so then you don't, then it's.
Okay. So it is really a map from obj of C to hom of C prime.
Yes, it's a map. I don't know what other. How many structures is it? I mean, I don't know. Like, other than maps, I haven't thought about what it is. I think one thing I was finding kind of interesting is like when you have a composition, you have something similar to, you know, when you stack two squares together, except everything here is actually morphisms.
Okay, so those things you drew in that square are eta of b on top and eta of b from one to the other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I guess that's how you actually use it, but people might just write. Yeah, this you can write eta and then you know what it has to be. Well, I guess I suppose you don't write on a, so somehow it happens to F B is the same as F W or something, and then you know you don't know which eta it is. But usually when they write it in then so. Maybe let me give a few more definitions. So,
is there any definition you could give of a natural transformation that would help understand what it means, like in some example in the category of vector spaces or group representations or something sort of familiar where we could see what it means intuitively?
There is a canonical example of natural transformation. Actually, it's a natural isomorphism. But there's very little time, so
okay.
I don't know if you want to do it.
Right.
But I can just tell you what it is, and maybe you can work it out. Which is the dual vector space is isomorphic to the vector space, right, for finite dimensional vector space. But it's, you know, there's no kind of natural way to do it. But the double dual mm-hmm. is canonically isomorphic to the original vector space. Mm-hmm. And that's a natural isomorphism.
Okay. You mean a double dual, you say natural isomorphic?
Yeah, double dual is
yeah.
On the category of vector spaces.
Of at least a finite dimension vector spaces. So it's exactly mapping, putting that into this framework is a little tricky. But.
Yeah, but you keep calling them natural, whatever, right? Like this map's natural. And like they talk about it without you actually knowing the category diagram. They just call them natural. It involves no choice, I guess. So now I'll do some tensor category stuff and then we get to grade it. Just a bunch of axioms, but involving what we've learned. So let me. So remember, C comes with all the set of, you know. All those things in those domains. Okay, and so tensor category, you can the set of data that comes with it. Like when we learn algebra, there give you a set of data. So you have a category, but you also have a tensor product which I'll explain each of these later. And this is an identity, so with respect to a unit of unit with respect to the tensor function. And there's an associator, associative to constraint, they call and a left constraint, a right constraint. So these are all the things that comes with a general tensor category. So let me start by, like, so C is exactly the same, because consider C as the, you know, the set of all these data. Now, now let's define tensor product. So tensor product is, so it's a function from C cross C to C, but without defining, I guess you could, in a short term, you can say it's a function from C cross C to C, but of course C cross C, it has a very, you know, natural structure as a category, the composition, just like component-wise composition and so on. But I mean, some of the details you can, but let me just maybe more like practically what it means was, is that, well, or maybe I'm just rewriting what I was saying. Right? So we will have, take two objects, so this tensor operation, we can take two objects and give you a new object in C, in the same algorithm category. And also, you can tensor, being a function, also allows you to tensor maps, tensor morphisms. And I guess, as I said, like the definition of functions, I'm kind of just rewriting out what it means to be a function between these things. It preserves all these things. Preserves, I mean, It preserves all these things. Processes the factor. I mean, maybe the only thing you need to, maybe you just want to specify these things on the original category C plus C to make sure you have a set of nice axioms. And as I said, this is pretty, you know, the thing you think you want to choose. I mean, I guess you can think of like for some or direct tensor product is fine now.
So the tensor category is still very abstract. I mean, you must start from an abstract. I mean, you can start from an abstract category.
Yeah, you don't have to work on the category of vector spaces. Okay. But you have a natural example in mind, which is
So because in all the examples I saw, the tensor categories were defined always starting from the vector or space category.
Right.
Doesn't need.
So the hump C cross hump C is when it maps to, in this tensor map, it's going to a map from the tensor product, the starting object to the tensor product.
Yeah, that's what I mean by preserving S and V,
okay.
If you write it out fully. So, I mean, if you write out too much, then, you know, there's way too much mess to remember, but now it should be, you can expand it to me. So, and you also have this identity from inside objects. So, and this is an identity with respect to the tensor product, which will mean, it's coming up. So, I will explain, give such an object such that the following, which will come in basically from the left and right constraint. But let me first talk about the associativity. I could talk about this. So it will lead to something else. So there's associativity constraint, which is kind of similar to the idea. So it's a natural transformation. So we'll be indexed by a set of something. And I want to say, maybe what I really need to say is what f is and what g is, then makes the natural transformation between two. But I will also write out a little more. more flexible. So A is a natural transformation. Efficient one. Shorthand notation for an object. So if I have, because natural transformation is indexed by a set of things. So I guess A is kind of maybe in C plus. The function will be something that tensors the first two components first and tensors the third. From this function to the one that tensors the second two components and to the third. And so those functions are from C cross C cross C to C.
So it's a natural transformation or natural isomorphism?
A priori, I think it's just natural transformation.
Okay. So, but that means that you can only move the parentheses in one direction and not the other direction?
Yeah, maybe. Actually, it seems like. Most of our practical purpose there are natural isomorphisms, but I don't remember.
You don't remember the definition.
I mean, but the more what's important is that it's natural, but and you also maybe a few. I mean, for all practical purposes, I remember it being a natural isomorphism, but somehow I didn't like that. So I guess those two that will kind of have that.
So, in the context of a category, isomorphism just means a morphism that's invertible. Is that it?
Yeah. It's not much different. And so I guess. When I write this, you can kind of reconstruct for yourself what the function is. I even have an isomorphism symbol. So you look at this, and also I need to tell you what the masks are, right? Because the left-hand side should be I'm saying that A is natural isomorphism between two functions. And to say these two functions, I need to kind of say the mass. You're given this, so it's from C cross C to something in C. The both functions from C cross C to something in C. And this is, so it's a family of morphisms in C indexed by objects in C cross C cross C. Right, just to fit in that framework. And F tends to G tends to say H, right? What it means that when you have, so it maps, three morphisms in C, home of C cross home of C cross home of C to something in just home of C, which is this object. That's the name of that object, the result. Okay? And the adventure space is what we normally are used to. And on this side, when you have three morphisms in the category C, you get kind of first, also bracket the second two. So this is kind of more concretely writing down what this isomorphism. So this is your A, UVW here. Isomorphism. And you can complete this thing, U prime, V prime, W prime. I'm just shorthand notation. I'm not right about that. The essential thing to know is what the map is and what this object is. So I'm going to use the same notation for the future, the next couple of things. Let's finish after this left and right constraint. So this needs to satisfy the Pantagruel equation. I guess maybe you all have heard of it, but let's try to complete this. Okay, now first draw a pentagon and stick in things what I think should be there. So I guess it's saying that if you have four things, you can refract them in any way. And you still, it's such a diagram can make. So you start with all the parentheses on the left, and you try to move them. I mean, there are only one sensible way to move. As long as you go forward, you can complete. I mean, I'm sure you can do this yourself. Firstly, moving it here, and then, you know, I mean, once way would take three, one the other way would take two. I mean, and then you stick it in and say, put in the appropriate map, and say, this has to commit. And just let me finish off with L, L and R. So there's a left constraint. So left constraint is also a family of natural isomorphisms. Actually, I did write it down. So natural isomorphisms. And then I will use this from annotation over there. So basically it says how the unit R is a unit. Compare I as a unit as the left on the left unit. So when you tensor I tensor V, it's supposed to be isomorphic to V, so that's kind of what that unit means, you guys think that just space. So this is via LV, and you have, so on this side, if you just, this is identity function on the right, so F is just going to be F. And on the left hand side, the function is maps V, object V to I tensor V, and also map F to ID, like the identity on I tensor F. So remember, so you see, this is a non-trivial specification. It could be something else, I don't know. This is natural, and the right one will be B tensor I. I mean, to split all these things. And so, and this is not.
Right?
Okay, idea, yeah. Sorry. You were saying that, right? So this was that. So,
the two diagrams are not connected.
They're not connected. I mean, yeah. So I mean, I just did not fill it out the bottom row, and they satisfy triangle constraint. So that's what you need for this to be a tensor category. So I'm just explaining all of the above. So L and B are such that this triangle location. Doesn't quite fit. Okay. So basically, the I in the middle. And you re-bracket it with the first or the second one. And respectively, you apply the right constraint on V here and the left constraint on the W here. And you're supposed to, you always get back V tensor cross tensor W, right? So this thing can be. So here, a lot of things, just the only way to write them down with the given information. Then we'll continue next.
Okay. And your notes will eventually have all of these.
Yeah, I have, just have also a lot of maybe some extra information I want to present. So, yeah.